This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, everyone. Do you wish you were somewhere sunny, but are dealing with another crazy spring? There's a solution to get that feeling. I'm grabbing a Hawaiian Breeze 5-Hour Energy and escaping there in my mind. Sports fans, ever stay up late for the game and drag the next day? A 5-Hour Energy shot will fix that no problem. 5-Hour Energy's website has tons of flavors, over 15 to choose from. Watermelon, Tropical Burst, Blue Raspberry, and even hard-to-find ones like Strawberry Lemonade and Extra Strength Fan Fuel. There's a flavor for everyone. You can even build your own 12 or 24 pack and have it delivered. Or grab a shot at your local store. They're everywhere. And it's basketball season. My schedule is packed and I don't want to miss a second, so I grab a 5-Hour Energy shot. They're perfect for back-to-back games or when my team plays late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going through the game and the next morning. Visit 5hourenergy.com for deals and to stock up before tip-off.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Welcome to another edition of National Spring Training Live here from Duffy's Sports Grill on Clematis Street in downtown West Palm Beach. Charlie Slows, Dave Jagler with you for the next hour with special guests.
Screech is here. I don't
Screech
know
if, is here.
He could be our first guest. He didn't have much to say.
Have you ever heard him speak?
No.
That would be an event.
That would be an event.
So we don't know his voice.
All right. Yeah,
so
he's trying.
Nobody would recognize him on radio,
that's
right?
True. That's true. It'd be a one-sided conversation.
That's true. But we do have the left-handed pitcher Mitchell Parker joining us in the first half of the show, and then Robert Hassel, the third outfielder, will join us in the second half of the show. Hello, Mitchell Parker. How are you?
Good. How are you?
It's the first time on the show.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had a nice track record of guys being on the show, having very good seasons. So we're trying to rub a little good luck on you, a little good fortune. I know that's all the talk, all the rage in the clubhouse. We've got to get on the show.
Oh yeah.
All right. You win
every day. I got it.
It worked for Jake Irvin even when he wasn't scheduled, right?
Right. He worked his way onto the show, and then he's in the big leagues a month later.
Absolutely. Well, Mitchell was in the big leagues very early last year, and somewhat unexpected, as you were called to the big leagues when Josiah Gray couldn't pitch in Los Angeles, and you had thrown just, what, one time in a couple of innings with Syracuse because they had so much snow on the ground they barely had played a game.
Yeah, I mean, I threw four innings out there, and for the first time in my entire life, saw a giant snow pile. So I was, it was pretty crazy.
Yeah, you and I talked about that last week. Snow was a new thing. Growing up in New Mexico, you'd never seen snow before.
Yeah, I definitely never saw that much snow. So when we got there, I was kind of starstruck with it.
So you're starstruck by snow, but you weren't starstruck by was it Betts, Ohtani, and Freeman, or in that order were your first three big league hitters at Dodger Stadium on Jackie Robinson Day. Kind of a big deal to pitch. Yeah, I mean, they threw you right in the fire. No, it was no soft landing.
Yeah, definitely hit the ground running that year, but I mean, try not to think about it. I try not to overthink it. I tend to do that on a lot of things, so.
Well, that's a pretty big deal in Los Angeles. There's not many bigger stages than, you know, the closest team to probably, you know, where you grew up in New Mexico. There were probably a lot of Dodger fans there. Years ago, Albuquerque was the AAA team for the Dodgers.
Well, I didn't know that. I knew that we were for the Rockies. That's the one that I remember with it.
Yeah, the Albuquerque Dukes were a Dodger AAA team in the Pacific Coast League for many years. But tell us what that was like. You get the call, you're coming to the big leagues, and you never went back to Syracuse the rest of the
Rochester.
Year.
Rochester.
Or Rochester. Rochester,
I mean, it was – I called my parents right at it, and I mean, I didn't really have anything to say to them. I was kind of still trying to process it all. And, I mean, like I said, I was trying not to think about it. Sadly, I don't remember much of the actual day anymore because I spent the entire day trying to not overthink it. So I get to experience that through pictures and everybody else.
Now, did you know the stat about Nationals starting pitchers making their big league debuts? Had you heard of the stat?
No,
not before. Do you know the stat?
I think. I'm not quite sure.
Okay. So when Steven Strasburg made his debut June 8th of 2010, he got the win. And until from that day until April 15th, 2024, when Mitchell Parker got the win, there was not a single Nationals pitcher to make his big league debut as a starter and win.
Okay,
it's pretty good company.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think I heard that.
Good thing you didn't hear it before.
Yeah.
You pitch five innings, you throw 81 pitches, which was no easy task considering you weren't built up.
Yeah, I mean, it was it was crazy. I mean, I think I was running purely on adrenaline. I don't think I slept much the night before, and I just was running purely on what was in the veins.
And the Nationals go on and win the game 6-4, so that final four innings, what was that like for you after you out of the game?
I mean, was able to kind of take a little breath and realize that we were having a good game going, and I mean, I was just trying to take it all in, and I was in the dugout just watching. I, again, was kind of processing who was on the field for them, for us. It was an awesome experience.
Yeah, most times you take it all in before the game, but you kind of took it all in after you were out of the game because you didn't have to think about what you were going to do anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I took maybe 3 minutes. I walked out probably hour and a half before the game, looked at the stadium, and then walked in, and that was all the processing before the game.
That's the biggest park in the big leagues these days.
Yeah.
55,000, 56,000 Dodger Stadium.
So you talk about kind of that day, and it's surreal. And then you make your home debut, pitch another great game, and get a win. When did it kind of cross that into the point of, hey, this is now my routine, this is my comfort zone? When did you kind of have that feeling like, all right, I'm here, I'm in the big leagues? How many starts did it take to kind of shake off the shock and awe that you had going on?
I mean, really, after my first home start, we're starting to kind of figure things out. Obviously, we're throwing pretty well. So, I was starting to not relax, but get a little more comfortable with it, and again, not overthink it all, and I was able to enjoy where we were going a little more and not be so not trying to think about it.
Of course, we mentioned New Mexico. That's where you grew up. Tell us the backstory of Mitchell Parker getting to the professional ranks.
I mean, I was a high school baseball player. We did some travel ball. I played mainly just for the local team back in Albuquerque. The same place I worked out at for the off seasons, except for this year being the first one that I didn't. And I mean, we mainly just did like things in Arizona and just went to college, went to San Jack, and the rest is history.
Now you had committed to play at New Mexico, right?
Yeah.
What happened there?
This here's about. I didn't really want to spend that much time in school. I knew I wanted to get into pro ball as quick as possible. And my agent, he was saying that we could do the junior college route and spend a year or 2 years in college and do that. So we jumped in for that.
And San Jacinto is pretty well known for producing big leaguers. Is that kind of what attracted you to that program?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the track record for them kind of spoke. That was what sold us on it. We knew that they knew how to develop the guys. We also knew that they're in the Junior College World Series every year, so that was a pretty good selling point. And I mean, again, just the names that they had out on their wall out there were some pretty cool names. So,
and how cool is it that you share a clubhouse now with one of your college teammates? I mean, because Jackson Rutledge was a 2019 draft pick, so he was a year in front of you. What was your relationship like with him in school, and then now in pro ball?
When we were in college, actually, every night we'd go over to his apartment in college, and he would cook us all meals, and I would do the dishes and everything. That's where we got that little rotation.
All right,
from.
So there's more to what's is he a good cook, or is he not a good? I mean,
he's a very good cook.
All right, so what's his go-to?
he likes to explore new things. We would just kind of give him a random thing, and he would figure out a way to cook it. And
well, is this like Chopped, you know, Sanjak edition? I mean, you just throw ingredients and say, make something?
Yeah, I mean, we would watch some TV. We'd see people make it on TV, and we'd be like, can you make that one? And he would spend a day trying to figure it out. We'd go grocery shopping, get all the stuff for it, and he would try it, and we'd give him a good or a bad rating. And if it was good, there usually wasn't much left. And if it was bad, there's probably a little bit of leftovers.
See, now that's all the stuff when I watch one of those things, my wife says, you better turn it off or you're going to be cooking dinner.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, you were drafted twice before the Nationals, right? You were drafted by the Cubs in 2018 and the Rays in 2019. Was there any temptation to sign with either of those teams?
I mean, yes and no. Looking back at it, I'm glad that we took the route we did. I mean, out of high school, I didn't feel like we were quite ready. I felt like we were getting close, but definitely needed to get out of the house a little bit, go kind of do a little growing up, I mean, on the field, off the field. And I felt like the 2 years in college definitely helped me grow up, figure out, I mean, how to be an adult, first of all, and then figure out how to kind of zero in on the pitching routine. We had a good pitching coach while we were there, Woody Williams.
Former big leaguer.
Big leaguer, yeah. He did a great job at kind of teaching us and letting us know what we need to work for.
So then you're drafted, but you're drafted in the weird 2020 season. So your season, talk about that year, because that year you got shut down, right? You're in the middle of your season, you get shut down. The draft is virtual. It's only five rounds. You might have been worried you weren't going to be picked at all. What was that whole year like?
It was definitely a really weird one. I signed the contract with the Nats, and then immediately we went into everything being locked down. So it was kind of like a hey, welcome, but we're not doing anything for a while. Like, we'll let you know. They had kind of a goal of when we were hoping for things to be starting, but obviously we weren't able to really figure out an exact time. So we just kind of went into the off-season workouts, and I mean, we're staying ready, but I mean, it was definitely a weird, uncomfortable year.
How about the year in college? What point was your season shut down? Like, how deep into that year were you?
I think I only had one or two starts that season, and then got shut down. So I threw very little that year, and then
with that little, did you know the Nationals were interested? I mean, because obviously no one's throwing at that point, so they must have had a book on you from previous years. Did you know the Nationals were a team that had been following your career?
I had no idea who any of the teams were that were keeping an eye. Obviously, the year before, we had a good idea that there were some teams that were looking, but nobody, I really had no idea. And then my agent called me, and he told me that the Nationals were gonna take us, and it was exciting, because right after I was drafted, Rutt called me, and we were talking. It was just, it was kind of a cool little welcome.
All right. Is he still cooking?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And are you still doing the dishes?
I do the dishes at my own house now.
Okay.
I've moved on to that one.
Okay.
That's right.
It's good skill.
Yeah. Getting married now and packed up and moved to Florida. You're year-round here in the West Palm Beach area.
Yeah. Doing all the dishes at home. My wife likes to – she's getting into baking, so baking takes all the dishes, so I got to do a lot. I feel like I'm doing more dishes now.
A lot of pans, right? Yeah. Baking pans, right?
Yeah. It messes everywhere, but it's, you know, it's
but
what
you
sign up for.
You told – you got tired of the cross-country drive twice a year in New Mexico.
Yeah, the 30-hour road trip every year was getting really annoying doing it twice a year. Plus, neither one of us like to really be cold, and we figured that here's one of the best places to not be cold, and obviously spring training being here was an easy sell for it. Being able to do everything we do normally throughout the season right in-house.
And a few of the guys are here too, right?
Yeah, there's a few of us that work out here year-round, and I mean, you just get to make good friendships with everyone, and you get to be comfortable where you're at.
So pitching at Albuquerque, I mean, that, you know, you think about Pacific Coast League City, AAA, the altitude's pretty high there. What's the altitude relative to like Denver? I mean, everyone thinks Major League Baseball, Coors Field is so unique. What's Albuquerque's altitude relative to Denver?
I think we're relatively similar to it. It's, it definitely wasn't a fun place to grow up as a pitcher, but, you learn to figure it out, and even now you learn to get the ball down. You don't leave it up as much.
I mean, because they talk about how tough it is to pitch there, and it seems like it's right in the pitcher's head. Mm-hmm. You having grown up in it, and you pitched in Denver last year and had a good game, is it not a big deal? Or because you're not pitching at altitude, is it hard to go back to it?
I mean, it was definitely a little different because spending a lot of time kind of at or around sea level going back, but it wasn't a crazy change. Had a lot of years of pitching up there to kind of understand it a little bit better and just kind of learn to understand the misses with the pitching.
We're visiting with Mitchell Parker, Nationals left-hander, here on National Spring Training Live from Duffy's on Clematis in downtown West Beach, West Palm Beach. We'll continue with more with Mitchell when we come back after this break on 106.7 The Fan and the Odyssey app.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parker winds and fires. Swing and a miss. He struck out Ohtani with a curveball. So Mitchell Parker strikes out Ohtani for his third strikeout. Only the MVP.
Only the MVP.
Not that day.
He went down against Mitchell Parker. Charlie Slows, Dave Jagler, and Nationals left-hander Mitchell Parker. National Spring Training live from Duffy's on Clematis here in West Palm Beach. That's an exciting moment, right? Strike out Ohtani.
Yeah, I mean, it was, again, I was a little shocked. Not shocked. I mean...
Your poor mom.
Yeah, oh, I know.
I mean, I mean that was as much entertaining to watch as you actually pitching.
I think my family was feeling the nerves a little more than I was that day.
A little bit.
I mean, go back and watch a tape of the telecast just to see the shots of the family, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, hey.
That's a lifetime of, you know, driving you to, you know, like you say, to Arizona from Albuquerque and a lifetime of achievement right there. That's as much for them as for you.
Yeah, I mean, that's driving back and forth from Arizona, driving down to Texas. We drove everywhere to get some baseball games in.
Yeah, you hear from a lot of players in all sports that when they make it, it's kind of like your parents make it with you.
Yeah.
It's their day, maybe even more their day than it is your day.
They were definitely very proud, very excited. They were just about as speechless as I was for that day.
So how many times did they come and see you pitch last year? Because I know they traveled a bunch.
They came to Atlanta. They came to D.C. They only came to, I think, four or five starts, but it was nice to have them out there. My wife's family came out a couple times, so it was nice to have some family there just to be able to pitch well in front of them.
So we've talked a lot about last season. Let's talk about this season, what's going on in spring training. So you're in a much different place. Last year, you're just new on the 40-man trying to find your way. Now you've been in the big leagues, but the goal is to still make the team. What's your routine like day-to-day as you go about this in your second big league camp?
Really kind of the same game plan as it is every spring training. You're trying to get ready for the season. Work on the little things that maybe the year before weren't as great. For us pitchers, it's pitch execution, and for me, the fun one, the fielding. But that's
all right. So you brought it up. You brought it up. So did you do anything in the? How do you work on that in the off season? How do you simulate game conditions in the off season?
There was a couple of times in the off season, McKenzie, we were out there getting ground balls on the turf field down here, just getting a little more comfortable with it, and then we were sneaking them in as much as we can during spring training. It's just like I was saying today, I'm just trying to not overthink it all, and I've been playing baseball for my entire life, so when I try and overthink it is when things get scary.
had you ever had fielding issues before last year?
No, but also didn't have many opportunities to mess it up leading up to that.
So, this is just from the bird's eye view. It seemed like the plays that were a struggle were the ones that were hit very slowly.
The weak
tappers. You talk about having time to think. I'm like, if just once someone would hit one about 120 miles an hour and have it stick in your glove, where you didn't have to think, then all this would be. Am I crazy to think that, or is it? When you look back on it, is that how you analyze what happened?
Yeah, I definitely realized I had a lot more time on things and slowed it down. It's not used to moving slow. For example, in my last game of the season and against Kansas City, the line drive that basically caught me is the less I had to think about, the better with that one.
But it is different. I mean, you work on it in spring training a lot. How much work during the season on when you get a comebacker? And you're never in the same position to throw to first. You could be off to the third base side, the first base side. You might have to go back over the mound to get it. Every play is different.
Yeah, the coach staff does a good job at, kind of mixing it up, especially this year, mixing it up, just kind of seeing if we can get into those uncomfortable positions after throwing the ball to kind of simulate a game as best as we can.
And it's different than a pickoff throw completely because you're not on the mound, you're not on the rubber.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And it seemed like the throws were fine. It was just those getting the ball in the glove.
Yeah, that was definitely the struggle, and we joked that I'm gonna be using a more broken in glove this year, but I got to size up on the glove too, see if we can get a little more to stick in that thing.
Well, let's talk about pitching. You talk about things that you can adjust. I mean, last year you had the fastball kind of elevated. You with your frame, you hide the ball a little bit. The off speed pitches work well. Is there anything in your repertoire that you're looking to tweak here in year two? Now that you've looked back on kind of all the data from year one, what are they saying works for you, and what maybe can you tweak to improve?
For the most part, we're keeping everything as it was. Obviously, you're just getting a little more confidence with the splitters and sliders, being able to execute those a little better. A couple times that last year that maybe weren't the best throw for it, but. Overall, just consistency with it is all we're aiming for.
Now, you didn't have much time in AAA, obviously, last year. But what was the biggest difference for you being in the big leagues? Pitching the big leagues, obviously, the fields are better, the lights are better, all the conditions are better. The hitters are better, too.
Definitely the hitters. They have their game plan, but luckily we have our game plan where we go in pretty well informed with it, and it's a lot more thinking with it, but at the same time it's hard to not have enough information. They do a great job at having everything for us.
Are you a big guy who wants a lot of information, or you've said many times in this conversation you don't want to think too much? So there is so much data. what's that line of too much?
I try to go into it not overwhelming myself. We have a brief little meeting before the game, but I try to just get little snips during the game, maybe in between innings, just a quick little.
Is that on their hitters or on you, on what you're doing?
Both. It just, if anything feels off with me, or if we're just seeing their hitters doing something, it's we kind of go do it as the game goes on.
Yeah, game of adjusting. If something's really working and you're getting swings and misses, you're not going to stop with it, right?
You
go with what's hot for that night.
Yeah, I mean, it's especially like on the debut, we weren't really locating a lot of things, so we had to kind of limit it just to a couple pitches, and it was working, so we weren't going to try and change it on the fly, and if it's working, we're just going to ride with it, and when it quits working, we're going to figure it out and adjust to it.
Yeah, and the big league's importance of getting ahead, strikes is the biggest thing, isn't it?
Yeah, oh yeah, it's a lot easier to pitch ahead in the count than behind.
So your first couple of appearances, you've been coming out of the bullpen. Are you looking forward to the opportunity, hopefully, to start a game? Has that altered your routine at all to come in as kind of the second or third guy?
No, I mean, it's again, they've done a good job at even coming out of the bullpen during spring training, being able to get enough time to do my regular routine that I would do before a game. I mean, end of the day, it's all just a baseball game, and like, I've been playing it my whole life, so it's, I mean, going out there and doing what we're supposed to.
Well, it's a little competition for spots this year with some of the pitchers added. I mean, that you can only control what you do.
Yeah, I mean, it's the end goal. Everybody wants to win a World Series, and the starting rotation, we have, I mean, a lot of good friends there, and I mean, we're all keeping each other honest, and it's a little friendly competition.
Have you had fun meeting a Sheen?
Oh, I love him. He's a fun.
How are you communicating? Have you picked up any Japanese?
I have not. I need to start working on it a little bit. I need to start figuring it out a little bit.
He seems like he's got a big personality.
Yeah, he seems like a guy who has fun.
No, he definitely has his fun, and I mean, he bleeds the fun into everybody else. It's hard not to have fun around him.
Nice.
Well, that's a good thing. Well, we appreciate you coming by and doing this. It goes by real quick. But if we get a chance to do it again down the road, and best of luck the rest of the way in the spring, and looking for a big year.
Thank you.
Mitchell Parker, our guest here on National Spring Training Live. More to come here from Duffy's on Clematis in West Palm Beach. Robert Hassel, the third Nationals outfielder, will join us coming up in a few minutes on the second half of the show. We need to take a break here from West Palm Beach on 106.7 The Fan and the Odyssey app. Welcome back here to National Spring Training Live from Duffy's on Clematis in downtown West Palm Beach, Florida on 106.7 The Fan and the Odyssey app. Charlie Slows, Dave Jagler with you for the next half hour up until 8 o'clock. We're joined by Robert Hassel, the third Nationals outfield prospect. Got into the game today as the Nationals beat the Astros 4-3.
If there's a game, he's playing.
They got him out twice today, which hasn't been easy for opponents to get him out. He's 9-for-22 so far, hitting .409. He's played in 8 of the 9 Grapefruit League games. 3 doubles, a homer, 5 RBIs. Pretty good start.
Thank you. Thank you.
So you only played in 8 of the 9 games. How did you not get into both ends of the doubleheader yesterday? What's wrong? I thought you were going for Cal Ripken's record here.
I was kind of, you know, well, we're obviously only going to play one of those games, but I wouldn't have been surprised, and I would have been fine with it. I've been loving it so far. So
every, you want to be on every road trip. You want to be in every lineup.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm here to do. That's what I'm here to do.
I like it.
Of course, you came to the Nationals organization, and what could go down as one of the great trades of all time. Nationals fans know that Juan Soto and Josh Bell were traded to San Diego. Mm-hmm. Nationals got 6 players back. Could end up, you know, the one player who isn't still is Voit, with Luke Voit, but eventually, all 5 of the other players are going to be big leaguers the way things are looking.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, we got Josh Bell back, too. so, I mean, I think it's safe to say, you know, the Nats did a really good job on that one. But the haul that we got over here, and I'm able to be with those guys every day and learn from them still.
What was your reaction when that came down? Because I'm sure you're playing in the Padres organization. You were a first-round pick. I'm sure you didn't see that coming.
Yeah, no. You know, I got – it was a game day, and I was in Fort Wayne, Indiana, playing high A. And my agent had called me and said, hey, look, we're hearing some stuff. You know, Soto was the big name in the trade. And when I heard that they were coming to – Padres kind of wanted him, I was like, man, I think I have a chance of getting traded. And so it didn't really matter. I was kind of nervous at first when I heard it, just because I had to meet. I spent a lot of time meeting people over there and creating relationships. And uh, But, you know, the Nats brought me in, and it's been great. It's the same game. That's what I've learned. No matter what team you play for, it is the same game. But, no, it's been great ever since I've been over here. So,
did you think it would be that many guys coming with you?
No, I didn't. But, you know, that's what a guy like Juan Soto, if he's in a trade, they're going to be prospects, big league players, impact players coming along with that. So
what was your relationship at that point? Because were you and James both at high together? Did you know James well at that point?
I had never played with James.
So was he? Wow. Was he a level below?
He was a level below.
And then Abrams was obviously had been in the big leagues, and Gore had been. So did
yes.
you really did you know them either? Or?
Yeah, no. 2020 when I got drafted, the first people that I was kind of close to was like Gore and Abrams and
okay.
all of them. And then James got drafted after me, and I never got to play with him, but I always saw him in spring training and stuff. But love those guys. They're great, and they're great ball players too.
And yet they find you know, the local kid for us, Jackson Merrill from Maryland, he ends up almost winning a Rookie of the Year last year. And he's a guy that they didn't trade away.
Yeah.
I mean, they were stashing prospects in that organization.
Yeah.
How about that? So, the guy never plays a second in the outfield, and they put him out there, and he was terrific.
Yeah, and I remember following his journey, and it started in spring training. He wasn't, by the end of it, he was playing every single day in the outfield, and I was like, man, this guy's going to break. And not only did he break, I mean, he almost won Rookie of the Year. He's a special player for sure.
And you probably didn't know Susana. He was down in the
well,
complex.
I knew I never played with him either. Always saw him at the complex. He was always throwing 102 every day I saw him, just like he is now. It's kind of insane. But him too. I mean, it's just a boatload of prospects,
And so now here we kind of marvel at this. I mean, you have obviously Cruz is in the big leagues at the end of last year. James came up, played well. Jacob Young almost won a Gold Glove. And then they take those guys out, and then you're in the game, and it's Dalen Lyle, and it's Pinckney. I mean, there is a ton of outfield talent in this organization. I mean, in a way, it's exciting, but in a way, it pushes you to have to get better. I mean,
yeah.
What do you think of the outfield room right now?
I think that's exactly what it is. I think, iron sharpens iron. I think we all have like minds, and everybody's got their own skill set. I think a lot of the outfielders we have are good hitters. And I think that's a tool that we all, really have at a high level. And so to be able to hit with these guys every day and do outfield stuff too, but really getting in the cage and learning from these guys and knowing that they're gonna perform too, and we all want to perform together as a team, but it definitely makes me better.
I kind of saw the group chemistry last spring training. I think it was the second game at Fort Myers against the Red Sox. Mm-hmm. And watching guys, I mean, you guys were all business around the cage before a game. I mean, there was no messing around.
Mm-hmm.
You guys were on a mission of what you had to do in the cage to get ready for a game following the program.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just being intent with it. And, I mean, it's contagious, too. That sort of serious business-like mindset is contagious when you get in the cage with those type of guys.
Now, what changes? You're added to the 40-man roster over the winter.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're coming to big league camp as a 40-man roster player. What does that do for you?
I think that's a step that has to happen to get to the big leagues, and for me that's the goal, and I want to help this team in the big leagues at some point but obviously you got to be on the 40-man to be on the big league roster, and it was my rule 5 year, and it made me know that they care about me, and they think I could potentially help them. So I was excited.
Let's go back. Your background, you grew up in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
I have a note that you played twice. Did you play twice in the Little League World Series?
Yeah, 2013 and 2014.
So Williamsport, how'd you guys do?
Well, first year we were 2-2, and then I think we went 0-2.
Okay, so we got to go there a couple years ago. The Nationals played in the Little League Classic, and I remember just seeing the kids when the big leaguers walked in. They're all down on the field playing, all their heads like, oh my goodness, the big leaguers are walking in. But, I mean, that was a pretty cool atmosphere. I mean, obviously you're 11, 12 years old. I mean, how much do you remember that whole experience?
Yeah, I remember it was really nerve-wracking because I felt like
you're on ESPN.
Yeah, yeah, ESPN. I felt like I was playing in front of 100,000 people.
Wow.
I felt like, And but being I took that with me, and I learned from that, and I was able to be in around that atmosphere at 11, 12 years old. You know what I mean? And I had that confidence ever since. I wanted to be on that platform. I made up my mind at 11 years old. I was like, this is what I want to do, because this is cool.
Yeah. You had a chance to play at Vanderbilt, which has just been a factory putting guys in the big leagues. But when you're drafted, you passed up that commitment to turn pro. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I just think it was it was a tough decision, and Vanderbilt's 30 minutes up the road, and I love Tim Corbin, and he was like, hey man, you can come up, you sure you don't, you can come up here and get 3 years under your belt and really turn it. And what I liked about him is he turned boys into men, I thought, and I think good college programs do that, but he really did that, and it was a tough decision. But where the Padres took me and all that, it was tough to turn down.
We're visiting with Robert Hassel III here on National Spring Training, live from Duffy's on Clematis in downtown West Palm Beach. We have one more segment to go with Robert, and we're going to get to it after we take a break. We'll be back with more here on Nat Spring Training Live on 106.7 The Fan and the Odyssey app. Here's the set. Now the pitch. Swing and a drive hit well to deep left field. Back goes Barber, way back, warning track, over his head and off the base of the wall. This is going to clear the bases. All three runners will score as Hassler turns and holds with an opposite field. Three-run double, clearing the bases, scoring Millis, Nunez, and House. Robert Hassel III with that big hit a few days ago. He's with us here at Duffy's on Clematis, National Spring Training Live. Winding down our final segment, Charlie Slows, Dave Jagler with you. Robert Hassel is a healthy Robert Hassel here in spring training. Past couple of years have been tough with a hamate bone injury and followed up. You had wrist problems that curtailed your playing time the past couple of years, but you seem like you're 100% go now.
Yes, yeah, and it was nothing major ever, but definitely some hardships in there. I mean, it made me realize how much I need my wrists for
hitting.
Yeah, hitting. I mean, it's just important. But there were some ups and downs, and I hadn't really ever had any downs in my career so far. So I think that was important and a big step for me.
It was funny during last season. Mike Rizzo, the general manager, was asked about kind of the state of the farm system and the prospects, and he mentioned your name and said you were kind of the forgotten prospect.
Yeah.
Because, they put all these rankings, and you're highly rated, and all of a sudden you're hurt, and you start to slide down a little bit. Now, prospect rankings don't play baseball games. So, I mean, I think it felt like he still had faith in you, and this organization has faith in you. Is that how you took him saying that?
Yeah, I do. And, I mean, at the end of the day, if I play how I'm supposed to play, I could probably speak for anybody, but if you play the way you're supposed to play, I mean, people are going to talk about you anyway. I think people were probably disappointed with how I turned out these past couple years. Nobody was more disappointed than I was, but it made me realize, the rankings and stuff, I never paid it any attention, but it's cool to look at and stuff, but it's a business, it's a business, what's going to get you clicks, and I was down and hurt for a while, but I still believe I'm the same guy.
So that highlight we played, you hit a bullet to the opposite field, and we've seen you, kind of healthy at the start of last spring training and healthy at the start of this spring training. Is that your ideal approach? Are you looking middle to left center? Because it seems like you have really good contact and power in that direction.
Well, I didn't know it until I got to pro ball, but I would catch stuff deep, and I would really excel at hitting the ball the other way, and I just built on that for years, and I think it's a safe option for any pitcher to try to take them the other way, because if you catch something out in front or get fooled or something, you still have a chance to go poolside with it. But since I'm good at it, I think I work on that probably 85% of the time, and then the other 15%, what I need, pull the ball in the air, whatever it is, I work on that too. But I went away at times from going the opposite field approach, and I really kind of saw.
And we talk about how hard it is to hit when your hands and your wrist aren't right.
Yeah.
Does that cause those bad habits? So I, like, hey, I don't feel great. I got to compensate. I got to start early, right?
Yeah, it's a game.
You feel like you got to cheat.
Yeah, it was. There was some of that for sure, and it's a game of inches. So, you know, I sat there and I thought about, like, even if it hurts just a little bit, you know, if it's affecting my swing by an inch, you know, or a half an inch.
I'm going to be late.
That sort of thing. Yeah, I mean, it's an out or a foul ball or whatever it is. So, but that always, I always looked at that from the positive side of it, like, I can manipulate that, you know, that part of that's on me, hurt or not. I should still be able to manipulate my swing, but being healthy definitely is better. I will say.
We've talked about hitting. We haven't talked the other part of your game. Speed obviously is a part, and you're a terrific outfielder.
Thank you.
Nationals Jacob Young was a runner up for the Gold Glove last year. The Nationals have some guys who can go get it.
Yeah. Yeah, and JY's amazing. I've learned just from being out doing outfield drills with him and stuff. I mean, he's amazing. And it makes you realize how much value that could bring, you know. Doubles in the gap that you can somehow catch and all that. And I've always had speed, but I do believe I need to use that to help my pitchers out. And obviously on the base path and stuff, I think I can go first to home. I really want to score a lot of runs, but the outfield too, covering ground, I think is something that is important to me.
Are you most comfortable in center field? Most guys say yes.
I'd say yes. I'd say that's just – I played just over 400 games in the minors. I think probably 300 of them have been in center. So I'd say that's probably the reason why. But I've been more comfortable. They played me everywhere this spring, and I'm comfortable everywhere. I really am.
As far as kind of this being your second big league camp with the Nationals, is there a comfort level that you've been through this before? Like, what's your – you know, what are you focusing on day to day before we even get into the games?
Yeah.
I mean, the drill work, the work in the cage.
Yeah.
I mean, how has it been in year two compared to year one?
Well, I'm more – I know more and more every year what I need and what I don't need. So I think coming into my first big league camp last year, I was really figuring stuff out. And I still – the time I was – before I tweaked my quad – I thought the numbers and everything, I was performing pretty good, but I was still figuring a lot of stuff out, what my routine, you know, what all that was going to look like. And this year I'm more firm with it. You know, I'm going in there doing the same thing in the cage every day, getting there the same time every day at the field, doing everything I need to do, injury prevention, you know, hitting the tubs, doing everything I need to do every day, and leaving no doubt.
Now, you, because of the injuries, you played in the Arizona Fall League 3 years in a row, which is a little unusual, so that... Your goal is probably not to end up playing in the Arizona Fall League next fall. Yeah,
they're going to retire your jersey. You're going to have a statue in the AFL.
I know. I don't know how many guys have actually been 3 years. I only played three games. See, that's when the injury started. The first year I played three games and got hurt mid-game with the hamate, and that's when it started. So technically I guess that one maybe doesn't count,
right.
But two full years in it. And I think, you know, I'm lucky that the Nationals gave me that opportunity to go because I think it rolled. It gave me really good momentum coming into both these springs.
I mean, did it really click last fall? I mean, your numbers were there. I mean, the power was there. I mean, was that kind of the best version of you last fall?
Yeah, it was. And it was crazy because there was nothing really different. You know, I struggled at the end in AAA. Went to the Fall League and did great. Nothing physically changed. Nothing mechanically changed. But mentally, I was comfortable being there. I had already been to the Fall League before, and I knew what to expect, and I think it was just the confidence, like I had that confidence going, you know, with me there.
So if you had to make goals for this year, of course, one of them is to be on the field every day.
Absolutely.
Play as many games as they let you play.
Absolutely. That's one of them.
He's already doing that this spring.
Yeah, that's one of them. I'd like to be a guy that's going to be out there every day. Yeah.
So that would be whether it's big leagues or if they say you're going to AAA, I want to play every day in AAA.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's not my decision,
right,
ultimately. But, yeah, that's what I'd like to do. I think I can – I have plenty of ability to do that. I do. The biggest goal is to get to the big leagues for me and help the big league team win. Look, I've played – I got drafted in 2020, and it's gone by in a blink of an eye.
You feel like you're close?
Yeah,
you're,
I do.
You're banging on the door.
I do, and I talk – you know, me and my dad are really close, and he talks about just growing up, and I've learned over the years that just the hardships I've had, the good years I've had, it's all part of growing up. So,
well, Robert, we appreciate you stopping by, and for our fans here at Duffy's and back in D.C. area listening on 106.7 The Fan and the Odyssey app to get a chance to know you. Best of luck. Keep it up this spring. We're having fun watching you.
We've enjoyed watching you. We know we're doing games. You're going to be in every one of them.
Yeah.
So we get to talk about you a lot.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Robert Hassel III. All right. That's going to do it for this week's show. We're back here next Sunday night at 7 o'clock here at Duffy's on Clematis. And David and I are back with you on Tuesday afternoon. The Nationals and the Cardinals at 1 o'clock. We'll stream that game on Nationals.com. That's Tuesday at 1 o'clock for the Nationals and the Cardinals. Our thanks, as always, to the Jack of all things, Jack Hicks. Slick Vic Ferreira back in our studios. And for Dave Jagley, Charlie Slow saying thanks for being with us for another edition of National Spring Training Live here on 106.7 The Fan and the Odyssey app. Have a good night, everybody.